Welcome back to another episode of Candid. I'm your host, Shanae, and I'm here with Bethany McCarty, Dudley Chungwes, and Nispa. And today we have with us a new guest host, and her name is Jade Russell. So she's going to be with us sometimes. She's going to pop in and out, and maybe even become a permanent member of the team. So as you guys know, for our series for the month, we are tackling health and wellness. And also for the month of March, it's also National Kidney Month. So this episode, we are interviewing a representative from the Bahamas Kidney Association and a dialysis patient. So I actually came up with the idea to interview someone from this organization as I was scrolling through Facebook, and I came across the flyer, and I was very intrigued and thought that this would be something that Bahamians should know about. Well, our audience should know about. I reached out and I got a timely response, and they were more than happy to come on the show and educate us on kidney health. So can you guys introduce yourself for me?
Sure. Well, my name is Tamika Roberts, and I'm the president of the Bahamas Kidney Association. In addition to that, I became active in the association. Well, the association started back in 2021. That's when we became a registered nonprofit organization. But my interest in kidney health and kidney disease awareness came about when my brother was diagnosed in 2017 with kidney failure. And then eventually fast forward 2018, about one year later, I became his donor. So I'm a living kidney donor as well. And that's where my interest grew in kidney health, and definitely bringing about more awareness to local Bahamians.
My name is Rudia Roll. I am a banker by profession. I'm a mother to a 7-year-old daughter. I am a newly established entrepreneur, and I am also a dialysis patient. As of June 2018, I was diagnosed with kidney failure at that time.
Okay, so Ms. Roberts, can you tell us a little bit about the Kidney Association, a little bit of history and what you guys do and stand for?
Sure. So the Bahamas Kidney Association, we came about, like I said, after my brother and I had our transplant. He had a transplant. We came back, and the media got a hold of our story, and they reached out to us, and they wanted us to share, you know, our experience and what it was like, you know, the whole process, which we did. And after the media got a hold of our story, we had a lot of persons reaching out to us, just wanting to talk. A lot of patients on dialysis and support family members that were going through a similar situation. And a lot of them just reached out to us and just wanting to talk and share and then find out, you know, how we did it. What did we do? You know, our own experience. And so it was a lot. And so during that time, my brother and I decided to see if, along with his wife, decided to see if there was a local foundation or some type of association that we could kind of direct people to and then to assist in terms of bringing awareness and assist persons who were battling the same thing. And we got connected with Dr. Ada Thompson, who was the president of the very first Bahamas, very first kidney foundation of the Bahamas. And that would have been established sometime back in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s, when that was established. And speaking with her, she was going into retirement and she was ready to really hand over the reins to somebody else. And so she was happy when we kind of said we were interested. And then she asked me eventually if I would go ahead and lead and spearhead the association, which I did. We were trying to kind of keep the same name over a period of time, like trying to keep the Kidney Foundation of the Bahamas, but that was not, we weren't able to do that. So we created a new association, Bahamas Kidney Association, basically building upon her legacy and with what was established back then from the foundation, just to continue awareness and, more importantly, to assist those who are affected by kidney disease, and that would be emotionally and financially. That is our main and our mission to definitely assist those that are affected by kidney disease. It is a very difficult and hard road. And for me, even though my brother was not on dialysis for a long period of time, he would have gone through just about what any dialysis patient would have gone through in terms of the different emotions and the feelings and the long hours sitting on a dialysis machine. And so we too kind of understand, I understand some of the things that, you know, kidney patients go through, even the support family members, the different emotions. And so that is how we started. And that is the mission and the goal of the association overall.
Okay, so you mentioned that your brother had issues with his kidneys and you were his donor. So could you tell us a little bit about kidney health and the process for that? And also, Ms. Rule, you could chime in as well where you see fit.
Certainly. I just like the, and I could say this, because the association is so new, and this year, you know, this is the first time we're really being present in the public's eye. Our main goal was to get the public to see more dialysis patients so that the public can understand some of the things that they actually go through. And so this whole month, you should see a lot of dialysis patients coming forth, speaking and telling their story, even on television, in the newspaper, through social media platforms like this. And that is the whole goal and the mission of the association, to get Bahamians to understand that this is a real problem. It is a real concern. And it is a very costly disease to maintain. And so definitely these patients need the support and help of the public and the association. On behalf of the association, we also would like, you know, to get more support from the public to assist these patients. And so that is what we are really trying to do this month, trying to get them in the forefront. So I would let Rudia Roll just kind of tell her story, and then I could just come in on the end, because that is our whole goal and mission, really, to get them in the forefront.
Okay, sure. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, like I said, I have a daughter. She'll be 7 in July. So while I was pregnant with her, I experienced a condition known as preeclampsia. So that's where blood comes out in your urine, and that coupled with hypertension, I dealt with that until after I had her. And subsequent to my pregnancy, the hypertension side. So I was in and out of the hospital. I would be okay, and then I wouldn't be okay. And there was maybe about 6 months where I was in and out of PMH private, just trying to understand what was going on. And then what the doctors at that point suggested I do was a kidney biopsy, just to see what was happening and why my pressure was fluctuating so much. And with doing the biopsy, they found out that I had a kidney disease known as IgA nephropathy. So hypertension affects the kidneys, where you develop disease, and some of them are reversible, some of them are irreversible. So at the time of finding out your current disease, they would advise you what the state of that disease is and what your plan of action would be, to either rectify, slow it down, or some course of treatment. So I was put on a plan, and exactly 1 year later, in June 2018, my kidneys failed. So usually I would go to my nephrologist every month and do a follow-up appointment. But what happened was, I would say in that May of 2018, there was a lot going on with me mentally, emotionally, you know, work-wise. There was a lot of projects I was on working in the bank. So I noticed some things with my body, but, you know, we attest different things to situations that we're going through. So if I feel tired, I know that I'm at work from 8 in the morning until 11 at night because I'm working on a project. So me being tired, I know that's what that is in my mind. Or, you know, I'm having cramps through the night. I know that I haven't been drinking sufficient water because I'm always working, you know, just like I said, it was a project going on. So it was a lot. So sort of made excuses for the different things that I had going on. And I mistakenly missed my appointment. And when I remembered the appointment, I went in and I remember sitting with my nephrologist and he said, you know, tell me what's going on. How's it been? So I said, you know, I've just been tired. I've been having these really bad cramps through the night. I would wake up and my leg would be cramping for maybe 5 to 10 minutes. And I would be in excruciating pain. You know, I feel a little bloated. I can't seem to get my energy levels up. So he said, okay, tell you what, do something for me and do some blood work today. So I said, you know, I'm not really financially prepared to do that today. So he said, don't worry about it. Just do the blood work and we can worry about that another day. Okay, fine. Not a problem. So I did the blood work, went home, went to work the next day. And I remember this, I remembered Clara's day. I was sitting at my desk and my supervisor was next to me. And I got a call and I always tell my doctor, I don't like when he calls me. Let me call you. Don't call me. Because it's usually never a good thing if your doctor is calling you. So he called and he was like, where are you? So I said, I'm at work. He said, okay, I need you to get to the hospital right now. You're not in a position to drive. So either someone brings you or we send the ambulance for you. So I said, what's going on? He said, we could talk about that when you get here. You know, just come to the hospital. We'll deal with it when you get there. So I went to the hospital and my sister was in town. So I said, Dee, you know, I need you to come go with me because who I was at that point, I was never good at asking questions. I was never good at taking charge of my health. I know now that I was not fully aware of what was going on with my body, what the risks were, what the challenges were, and how to fully understand and cope with it. So I asked her to go with me. And when we went to the hospital, they were trying to set me up to put a catheter in my neck. So the catheter is how dialysis patients receive their treatment on the initial phases. So they would put a catheter in your neck and it would connect to your heart. And there would be tubes that they hook you up to the dialysis machine for hemodialysis. So I said, no, I'm not prepared to do dialysis. I'm fine. You know, nothing's wrong with me. I'm not a dialysis patient. He said, your blood work suggests that you are in kidney failure. He said, all of these things that you were describing to me are signs of kidney failure. So I said, I'm not doing this. You know, for me at that point, I didn't understand dialysis. I always felt that persons who are on dialysis, you know, it would deteriorate your kidneys faster than anything else. That was my assumption of dialysis, that people who go on dialysis, they don't come off. I had little knowledge and education on the topic. So he said, okay, stay in the hospital with me overnight and let's see what happens tomorrow. And I promise you, I felt like that was death because it was not long after that I experienced just vomiting all hours of the night, vomiting. I had no control over my bowel movement. Just how they say, you know, sometimes you lose your pride when you have a baby. I lost pride when I had kidney failure. The things those nurses had to do for me while my body went through that, I would not imagine or wish that on anybody. If you can prevent it, I would suggest that you do that because that is not something that you want to experience. So not long after that, I would have gone to Cleveland Clinic to be added to the transplant list. And I've been on the transplant list since June 2018. So what they do is they would backdate you from when you start dialysis to sort of quicken the pace at which you would get a kidney. So I've been living on dialysis since June 2018. I went through depression for maybe about 18 months. It's hard on the individual going through dialysis. It's hard on the family members. If you were to ask me some things I wish that were in place for persons that go through these sort of temporary health conditions, I would call it therapy for the person, therapy for the family members, just support. And that is one of the greatest things that helps you go through this process because it's trial and error. You have good days, you have bad days. You have times when you feel completely overwhelmed because it's a draining process on the body. So for me, I go to dialysis on the first shift because I did not want my life with my daughter to be completely consumed by this new aspect of my life, temporary aspect of my life. So my day consists of getting up around 2:15, 2:30, just to mentally prepare myself. The night before I would prepare her for school. So my mom would take her to school and make sure she has breakfast, all of that. And 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm mentally preparing myself to get ready, drive up in Palmdale, go on dialysis from about 4 until after 8. Then I would come home, sort of try to mentally catch myself, get ready for work, drive up to Village Road to do work through the day while being a banker, get off from work, drive home, be with my daughter, who is just a ball of energy. And, you know, it's very taxing on me mentally. Like Tamika would have said, it's very expensive. One of my medications alone are about $1,200. And that is a pill that I have to take every day. Every day, along with other vitamins, because when your kidneys aren't functioning, they're unable to filter the toxins out of your blood and the waste. So you're not absorbing the nutrients that you need to have for your body to function normally. But it's definitely been a roller coaster of emotions. I still find myself crying sometimes when I drive to dialysis at 4 in the morning. But above all, I said that I'm thankful for life. You know, God doesn't bring us to these things to leave us here. And I have to believe that. So I, too, am in the process of hopefully receiving a transplant soon. So I would have to wait on the list. I don't have a donor available to assist me. So I'm on the list right now, and I'm currently doing fundraising activities to ensure that when I do get the call from Cleveland Clinic to say that, hey, there's a kidney ready for you, you know, I'm financially prepared to go. So that's another thing with transplants as well. You have to be financially prepared to receive the kidney, because if not, you know, there are medications that too cost a lot of money post-transplant. And all of this has to be factored in. You have to be able to sustain this new body part that you're receiving. So I know that's a mouthful, but that's just how I got where I am and how I'm currently functioning in this new aspect of my life.
Well, hearing that is very saddening. I honestly feel like I want to cry, because that sucks. And I can't imagine dealing with that and having a child. And it's a lot. And I can only imagine how difficult that is for you.
Shanae, I would also say, you know, what Rudy is saying, I could say that it's the same thing that my family went through. And I'm probably almost certain that every kidney patient, every dialysis patient, every person that experiences kidney failure would go through the very same emotions. And that is why, too, the Bahamas Kidney Association, we know the different emotions that patients go through. And we have introduced this month a counseling sessions for persons. And we're hoping that dialysis patients, even support group family members, take advantage of this. And we have a licensed psychologist who has put a plan together for patients or persons affected by kidney disease, because it is very emotional, and it is a burden emotionally and financially on patients and their family members. And that is a very important thing. And they definitely need the support. And that is why we feel the need to bring them forward so that they could tell their stories and the public could kind of understand and feel what kidney patients go through and the family members.
Listening to your story, I have so many different questions. My first question would be, what would be the warning signs to kidney failure? And my second question would be, what ways can you avoid it, like in your diet or in your lifestyle?
Some of the warning signs I experienced were severe cramps. And I'm not talking cramps where, you know, sometimes your foot or your hand may fall asleep and there's a tingling sensation. This cramp is worse than those cramps that you get during physical education. It literally feels like your bones are breaking. So I would wake up and my legs, for some reason, it mainly affected my legs. It would be in abnormal positions. So I'm talking bent back, bent to the left, bent to the right, and I am unable to move my body. It's as though someone is literally holding my leg in these unnatural positions. So I would say that being severely tired, I know that I'm resting. I know that I'm taking time for myself, but for some reason, it's as though my energy was not catching up to me, or I was not catching up to the energy. Two, another thing I would have had at that point was a pressure machine. So like I said, I knew that I had hypertension. So I had an at-home pressure machine. So my pressures would be, let me see, I usually have photos. I believe they were like 220 over 195. And those are what we would call stroke numbers. So if I were to visit a walk-in clinic and they saw those numbers, they wouldn't even assist me. They would send me immediately to the hospital because at any point I could have a stroke. That's how high my pressure would be. So I would have headaches that wouldn't subside, cramps, bloating, and like I said, just, you know, feeling very tired. So those were the signs that I had.
And what can you do to combat the issue before or even during feeling these symptoms?
Well, kidney failure doesn't usually just come on you. It's a process. Well, I know it to sort of be a process. So you would experience hypertension, and high blood pressure usually gives you headaches that, let me see how I can describe it. They're usually around the circumference of your head. So you may have a headache that's a pain to the right or to the left or to the front. Pressure is usually around your entire head. So it's not at one point, it's usually around the circumference of your head. And when your pressure is high, so usually when we go for our checkups, you know, a part of the triage is that they check your pressure. And if your pressure isn't in the normal range of about 120 over 80, they would express to you, or should express to you at that time, that, or let your doctor know that you could possibly be hypertensive. So what you can do to assist with hypertension is, I can only tell you, you know, what I've learned over these years. Decrease your salt intake, exercise regularly, drink a lot more water. We should actually drink half our body weight in water, if I'm not mistaken. Half our body weight in water, limit your salt intake, definitely more fruits and vegetables. You should limit your pastas and your rice and your bread and just eat as close to the ground as possible. You know, I'm not saying completely do away with all these other parts of the food pyramid, but just to make sure, you know, you're taking in what your body needs to keep your pressure at a normal rate. But of course, you know, there are articles online or doctors that we can consult for more information on that topic. But definitely, if you could, minimum 30 minutes a day. So believe it or not, only since I've been a dialysis patient, I now jog a mile 3 times a week, and I exercise Monday to Fridays for a minimum of an hour. So I'm actually more active now than I was before I was diagnosed with kidney failure. And the thing about it is, it's sort of addictive. Exercising is highly addictive. So the more you get into it, the more you actually want to do it. And I definitely see this being a staple in my routine from now on. So I know people may think, when do I find the time to do all of these things? So we find time for the things that are important to us. And only as of late, well, not, let me don't say late, maybe within the last 6 months, I've had to slow down because I lost my grandmother the day after my birthday last year. And it was just a lot on my family. It was a lot going on because my grandmother lived with me. It was my grandmother, myself, and my daughter. So that was hard for me. And not long after that, when this year started, I had a dislocated and a fractured shoulder, which initially I thought was due to dialysis patients having brittle bones, but it was actually due to my daughter sleeping on my shoulder. The constant pressure of her on my shoulder popped it out of place. So I would have been in the hospital as soon as the year started, just dealing with that and trying to get through that. And the sickening part of it was the shoulder that was dislocated and fractured was on the arm that I dialyze on. So I have a biological access, which is called a fistula, where they take an artery and a blood vessel, and they join it to make one big blood vessel so that they can stick you with needles, hook you up to the machine to dialyze. So I use that so that I would be able to take the catheter out of my heart, because it makes you very susceptible to infections that, you know, can cause other issues to go on and further delay your process of getting a transplant. So this year started off really rough for me, but, you know, I've since been in therapy. I stopped therapy as of last week, so my shoulder's better, and dialysis is a lot less painful. So dislocated, fractured shoulder and dialyzing on that arm. And when you're a dialysis patient, you can't take pain medication. The strongest pain medication that I can take is like a Tylenol or Panadol. So trying to take those two very soft medications for the excruciating pain that I was in the last 2 months were definitely tragic, to say the least. But I'm better now. I'm definitely doing a lot better. So that's something else that happened recently to me.
To add on to Rudia, I don't know if she's done, to add on to Rudia in terms of the causes for kidney failure, we had a webinar yesterday with Dr. Sawyer, Adrian Sawyer, and he gave some very good information, especially as it relates to Bahamians and kidney disease in the Bahamas. And all over the world globally, the two main causes for kidney disease would be hypertension and diabetes. And definitely we could see that the Bahamas population, there is definitely a lot of hypertension and diabetes in the Bahamas. And so those persons are at risk for kidney failure. Again, that is one of the reasons why the association is here to also put in place awareness and preventative measures. So things you can do to prevent getting to kidney failure, and like Rudia said, exercise, drinking your water, and diet. Our diet is definitely one of the main reasons and causes for us to have hypertension and diabetes. And that's one thing, again, that the association is bringing awareness to, for Bahamians to watch their diet, get out there and exercise and drink water. That is so important in preventing those two main causes for kidney disease.
Okay, so if you don't treat your disease, it would get worse. So what is the course of action once you've discovered that your kidneys had failed you?
Well, the cause of action once your kidneys have failed, I know yesterday in Dr. Sawyer's speech is basically, and in speaking with another nurse, you know, people could be in kidney failure and not be on dialysis. That's one thing with a renal diet. They'd have to watch their diet. But basically, once you're in renal failure, you are either have to be on dialysis or a kidney transplant. And of course, for all dialysis patients, the ultimate goal is to get a transplant so that they could come off of dialysis.
Okay, and what is a renal diet? What does that consist of?
The renal, it's various. It's a lot of different foods. And also, the association, we put on quarterly webinars that would educate renal patients, kidney patients on foods that they should eat. And it's called what's fueling your veins. So there are kidney-friendly foods and there are foods that are not so friendly to the kidney. And there are many. You have different fruits and vegetables. Some are high in potassium, some are low in potassium. Some foods are high in phosphate, some foods are lower. So foods that are high in potassium, high in sodium, high in phosphates, they would do more damage to the kidneys than those that are lower. And some are berries. Berries are very friendly foods to kidneys. And when you start looking at the higher potassium fruits like mangoes, and you have some melons and nectarines and peaches, some foods that are higher in potassium that are not so friendly to the kidney. And then you have other foods. Kidney patients are also encouraged to stay away from processed foods, processed meats. And so there are there's lots of information, but we too educate the public on this. Every month, every quarter, we have guest speakers that come in and speak to these things, because we do believe that once the public gets the knowledge, definitely there will be change, or there should be changes in diet and the way we care for our bodies.
Ms. Roll had brought it up recently, where she was saying that she's ready for a transplant. Now I was going to ask, what is the process of getting a kidney or an organ? And is it possible to become an organ donor? What is the way to sign up to do so?
Well, right now we don't have an organ donor listing or a transplant list registry in the Bahamas. So what you would do is, what I would suggest persons who are interested in a transplant do is, it may seem like a lot, but you can do research. There are some top hospitals that are known for transplants, whether it's a heart transplant, a kidney transplant, liver transplant. You do your research and you go with the hospital that's most comfortable for you. And what you would do is, most, well, what happened for me was, if I'm not mistaken, my nephrologist would have written me a referral for Cleveland Clinic. So he works directly with Cleveland Clinic. And once my insurance company would have certified the information that this is one of the hospitals that they work with and it is on the registry, I make the appointment, because what they do is they put you through education classes. They inform you on different types of kidneys that you can accept, whether you want to accept a kidney from a living donor or a deceased donor. So what happens is, you have persons that may have their organs signed over in the event of death. And if someone was to pass away, you have the option to accept that kidney or from someone who just walks into the hospital and decides, you know, I want to take some classes and I want to find out if this is something that I'm comfortable with. And then I would, you know, donate my kidney to someone else. You literally have people that do not know you, and they will walk up to the hospital and sign over their body parts to give you a better chance at life. So there's a number of things that they put you through. One of the steps an organ donor would take is a psychology or a psychiatry. What would be the word for it?
I could help with that too, Rudy, if you want to. So we went through the entire process. I can tell you, or tell anybody who wants to donate an organ, more specifically a kidney, because that's what I went through. The process is very intense. And like Rudia said, you go through a whole, an extensive medical examination. They test for every single thing you could think about. Everything is tested. You go through different counseling sessions with a psychologist, with a sociologist. They even, I know from my experience, they even go right down and find out if you have a lawyer to create a will. They go through everything. Of course, the one of the risks for donating a kidney or even in surgery is death. So they walk you through all of these things. And so you have a real picture of exactly what you are doing, what you're giving up. And so, and at the end of the day, like I could remember, I had 2 days of full intensive testing. Yeah, the testing is very extensive for a kidney donor. And like I was saying, I could remember taking flights back and forth to Cleveland Clinic very often to do constantly urine tests, because they monitor you over a period of time. And then there's a 2-day extensive testing. Like they do everything, they scan everything, they test everything. You go through a lot of counseling sessions, like I said, with a psychologist, a sociologist. They bring in the social worker and they find out everything about you, what your income is like, what you have the support once you're done. And like I said, they even go through and make sure you understand that at the end of the day, there is a risk, even a risk of the donor getting kidney disease, even though that's very small, but they make you understand that these are still possibilities, even death. And so they make sure you have a will in place. And if you don't, they could bring in somebody for you. The same thing, if you want someone to pray for you, they find out what your religion is, and they go through all of these things. So it's really real. And I can say it's extensive. And so if a person passes that testing, all of that that goes on, definitely they would be a suitable match for a kidney donor.
Okay, so you talked a lot about going to and from Cleveland. And I know a lot of Bahamians wouldn't be able to financially support that kind of travel. But is there any plans in the making for a Bahamian registry for kidney donations?
I can say that yesterday on the webinar with Dr. Sawyer, I know nephrologists, they have been calling for one. Of course, this is something that is not a small task. And so it would definitely need the support of government and other stakeholders. But I think it is something that has been on the platform for nephrologists and definitely for the Bahamas Kidney Association. We want that because we can't really give you stats and give the public information on how many kidney patients there are, how many need help, you know, what is the cost, how many are on dialysis. Like those types of things are very important to even know who you're assisting, who needs help. But we do know that this disease is very expensive. We do know that a lot of people on dialysis don't have medical insurance. We do know that a lot of dialysis patients need the medication even once the toxins are taken out of their body. They need supplemental medication that is very costly. I got a list today from a pharmacist and I calculated everything on the list. And of course there are about 12 to 15 medications she has on them and depends, the doctor could recommend anywhere between 8 to probably 10 of those. And the full list came up to over $4,000. Dr. Sawyer yesterday suggested that a dialysis patient, I think would be like up to $95,000 a year in terms of maintenance for a dialysis patient. So this is, and that's not medication. I think he said the medication is anywhere between, he estimated about $2,500 to $18,000, I think, a year. So this is a very expensive disease.
We haven't factored in the fact that dialysis alone can cost you about $4,000 a month.
Correct. And a lot of people, the thing about it is the insurance, if you're on dialysis for about 10 years, 5 to 10 years, and you have medical insurance, your insurance alone eats up a lot of that. So, and that's the case with many dialysis patients as well. They have medical insurance, some of them may, but if you're on dialysis for 10 years, 5, 10, 8, 15 years, you have no more insurance. So how are you going to take care of yourself? How are you going to continue with your medication? How are you even going to try and get a transplant, which is another probably $300,000 just for the transplant itself. And like Rudia said earlier, the medication for post-transplant is just as expensive. And they are medications that you have to be on for the rest of your life. You can never come off of them. You have to be on them for the rest of your life. And they're just as expensive. But the patient then has a better way of life because they don't have to go to dialysis, but the cost remains. And that is something that we definitely want to sensitize the public to as well. And, you know, the help that these patients need, they need help.
And something else too, I think that we need to factor in is that there's a cap with your insurance. So most insurance companies, they have a lifetime benefit. Your lifetime benefit is maybe about, if I'm not mistaken, mine may be about 2 million. Correct. And that may sound like a lot, but if you're running that up for $4,000 a month, that's just the treatments. Blood work is 500. My medications are about $1,500 to $2,000 a month. That's just 1 month. That's not if I may, God forbid, have an infection. That's not if some extra tests need to be run. So Cleveland Clinic too, because I'm on the transplant list, there's blood work that I have to do for them as well every month to make sure that I remain eligible. So I go to Cleveland Clinic once a year to do my annual physical with them. So they take your blood work from the clinic that you're at, wherever you may be located, but they still need to have their files on you. They need to run their tests to make sure that, like Tamika would have said, these extensive tests, that your results remain within a certain range, because as a dialysis patient, I still have to remain relatively healthy enough to receive the kidney. So just because I'm on dialysis, that doesn't mean that, okay, my kidneys have failed. I might as well continue to eat the fried foods, or I might as well continue to eat Kong salad every day, or whatever it is I choose to indulge in, because the kidneys have already failed. And that is definitely not true. You definitely have to remain healthy, because they're not going to give somebody's perfectly healthy kidney to you if you're not taking care of your body now, because while you're on dialysis, you have to continue to remain healthy and do the best that you can for your body.
While we're on finances, Rudia, earlier you said that you normally do cookouts and stuff like that to support your illness. Do you have anything planned for you know, the nearby future?
So I haven't had any cookouts. So I try to do fundraising that's not too taxing on me or my family. So 2 years ago, Tamika, I think it was 2020, right before COVID, I had a walkathon and it was relatively productive. It was a really good turnout. And that's where I actually met Tamika, because her brother is like a rite of passage. You know, when you go on dialysis and there are new people that come into this lifestyle, you try to give them as much information and as much advice. And her brother has definitely been, still is, great help to me. And the advice and the assistance that he offers me, you know, it allows me to, that two persons who recently became dialysis patients, it puts me in a better position to offer them more advice to make this process as, I can't even say smooth, because nothing about this is smooth, but less taxing in areas that I can assist them with. So there's a saying, you know, we've died so that they may live. So we know the things that we've experienced, and we help them and give them the advice to make sure that they don't have to experience these awful things. Because most recently, when we had COVID, I had the very first round of COVID. So I was in the hospital for 6 weeks, and it was absolutely tragic, I promise you. My family, it was hard. You know, they thought they lost me with kidney failure, but I know for a fact that we pray and we're a family of God, but it was hard to see me going through that. And actually last year, my story was on our news. And if you see the photos of me and what I went through, you wouldn't believe that that was me at that point. And me now, it looks like two completely different women. But, you know, it's a lot, but what I'm doing right now for fundraising, to get back on topic, is I have Team Dia shirts. So there's some green shirts that I have, collared shirts, where I have a logo embroidered on the left breast. And where it started was, you know, my sister and I, when I had kidney failure, my family named the group chat Team Dia. So, you know, it's just like the little support group for my family, our little WhatsApp group. And we just made a little logo just one day, messing around, just made a little logo, and I put it on a shirt, and somebody saw it, and, you know, people wanted it. And I said, these shirts are a little costly, they may cost some money. And they were like, no, I wanted it. And this is my second year now doing these shirts. Primarily I provide them for Bank of the Bahamas, but now I provide them for pharmacies, I provide them for corporate offices, people who know someone going through kidney disease or kidney failure. Because, you know, for the month of March, we wear green. So I source the green shirts, I provide them bracelets, pins, and I sell them, because it's not as taxing as trying to, what I find to be a little taxing, cookouts. You got to get donations. That's the biggest thing in order for you to make money, is donations. Because if not, you're spending a lot more money before you get the money back. So I do my fundraising through just selling my items, and I may have like a happy hour fundraiser every now and again to keep things going, but I only do it once a year because, like I said, you know, being a dialysis patient, it's a lot, and I have my ups and downs. And I decided very last minute to continue with my fundraising because, like I said, this year I started off with my dialysis access arm being dislocated and fractured. So the pain was excruciating, and I just couldn't determine how long I would be going through this. And because sitting on the machine for 4 hours and being in pain where the tears are just flowing, it's hard to think about fundraising at that point. I had just put that off until a later date. But as I got better, I said, you know what, let me just try and do this, because at any point I can get a call for a kidney, and I want to be financially prepared to say, okay, I can come, because I won't just take the kidney because I'm tired of dialysis, because I could go to someone who's financially prepared to continue funding that new body part that they're going to receive.
Well, I don't know if anyone has any other questions, but you guys have said a whole lot, and we thank you so much for coming and speaking with us and helping us educate Bahamians about kidney health, and hopefully our viewers appreciate it as well. If you guys have any final remarks that you'd like to say, you can.
Definitely, I would like to call upon the entire Bahamas to support the Bahamas Kidney Association, and definitely to support those that are going through kidney disease. You've heard Rudia's story and some of the challenges she faced. The treatment and the maintenance of kidney disease is very costly. It is very expensive. And even recently, I don't know if you've seen a lot of GoFundMes going around, and I've seen a lot. And a lot of them are kidney disease related. And so people are trying to raise funds on their own. And like Rudia said, it's hard. It's very hard. And so they do the best that they can. And so we're asking everybody to support Rudia, support other kidney patients that are in need of help and funding, and definitely to support the Bahamas Kidney Association so that we too could provide support to these persons. One of our goals is to assist with medication, to assist with persons like Rudia who has to make that extra trip to Cleveland Clinic or they want to get a transplant. We would like to go ahead and donate to such causes. And so we need funding for these for kidney disease. And so we'd like you to support definitely for the month of March. We're green every Friday. Rudia's already advertised her shirts. You can get
shirts.
Yes. So every Friday we want people to wear their green. Definitely hit up Rudia for your green shirts and support us, please. We want to see green shirts. Tag us on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, so that we can know you're out there rooting for us. We could feel the love and support.
Rudia, one more time. Tell our listeners where they can get your shirts.
So I'm on Instagram at Triumphs to Transplant. So that's TRIUMPHSTO, Transplant. So you can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. My name on both my personal pages is Rudia Roll. I haven't had any fancy names as of late. So RUDIA Roll. I'm more than happy, same as Tamika, to offer any information, any advice that I have for persons who are new to this disease, new to this temporary health condition, because this is just going to be a chapter of our life. We're definitely not here to stay here. So Triumphs to Transplant and Rudia Roll on both platforms, Facebook and Instagram.
One last thing and then I'll hush. If they could also tune in the Bahamas Kidney Association, we have a lot of events going on this month. For persons who want to find out more about kidney disease, who want to ask the medical professionals about their condition, please. We have our website up, bahamaskidneyassociation.org. All of the dates there. For every Sunday, there will be a webinar at 4 p.m. And we have the Zoom details there this Sunday. On March 13th, we have Dr. K. Joy Sims, and she's a Bahamian, but she works in New Orleans at the Children's Hospital. And we'll be discussing pediatric kidney disease, because kidney disease is not an old person's disease. You have kids that also are affected by this. And so we feel that the more education the public gets, the more understanding we get to see in terms of this disease and what it does. So we want to encourage you to tune in, and we have a lot of other activities planned that can be found on our website.
Thank you guys so much once again for coming and talking with us. We really enjoyed the conversation, and I honestly learned a lot. I don't know about everyone else, but I learned quite a lot. Thank you for tuning in to Candid. Keep it real, Bahamas.